A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Seen the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day. It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
It is indeed the KSL Greenhouse show on KSL News Radio. Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos today. Todd Bettis, along with the crew from the Extension. We got Mike Karen and J.D. Gunnell with us today. Great to have you guys here. And the visitors, they don't know, Ton, but 10 o'clock is the time we do WaterWise.
WaterWise Tips at 10 with the KSL Greenhouse Show. We save you time, money, and work in your yard and garden.
And for WaterWise today, we're going to talk about, and this is the reason we kind of drug you guys in here today, is we want to talk about drip irrigation. And lots of experience and knowledge here. So drip is something that, oh man, it's just something that will save this valley and the Wasatch Front so much water if we can get everybody engaged in it.
It really will. We've been really focusing on lawns because that's our big water waster. But I get a number of calls every summer, people like, well, I put my garden on drip and all my plants are dying. And Mike and I will go take a look and our feet sink into the soil 6 inches because there's so much water. People just, I think a lot of homeowners especially don't understand the techniques and the principles behind drip and what goes into it to actually keep your plants healthy, not overwatered or underwatered.
So I just wanted to say that I've worked with people that have irrigated large areas of their landscape with drip, and they're overwatering with drip. So drip is not necessarily this magic bullet for saving water if we don't understand the basics of, you know, when and how to apply it. Like we would with sprinklers, we can still overwater with drip. It doesn't matter how we deliver the water if we don't get the timing right, if we don't get how long we're supposed to water.
Right, emitters.
The right emitters, and you know, and drip was developed for row agricultural crops like onions, for example, and it works great for that kind of stuff. And then comes along now we have point source drip, which is the individual emitters that you can punch holes in the pipe, and you can install emitters near the plant or run little spaghetti tubes over to those. And then it becomes even harder to kind of determine, well, what are the water needs? How often do I water? When do I turn this on? When, you know, those kind of things. And then to really make drip complicated, all the manufacturers now have all these things like micro sprays, micro sprinklers, bubblers, these things that aren't drip at all, but are installed in a drip system. And now we really have apples and oranges trying to be together on, you know, in the same area. And they can't be compared together very well. And so micro sprays, you know, they're going to spray out a large area of water. They typically need to run for a long period of time, maybe much longer than some of the types of drip or point source emitters. And so it just is this area where a lot of people just are confused about, how do I go about installing this? First of all, the layout is different. It's a lot different than putting out a sprinkler. And I don't know, JD's got a lot of opinions and a lot of experience with drip. Well, my love affair with drip is over, actually. Finally ripped it all out and put in inline drip and on a grid system, which I space I have pipe with dripper with drip built into it. Every 12 inches, it leaks, and I space those out about every 16 inches. And so I have a grid through my yard, and the point source stuff with the spaghetti tubing. So I got tired of tripping over that and fixing that, and the neighbor's dog ripping it all out. And, you know, and so my love affair with drip is basically all point source drip and micro sprays is gone. It's not drip. It's not true drip. And it really makes calculating and figuring out what you need to do in your yard much more difficult.
Yeah, and we've gotten together as a group of horticulturists, and we've really been trying to tackle the math and science behind all of the pressure you need and the length of the tubing that you can, how many gallons of emitters.
Yeah, how long can you go with this tubing before you run out of water?
And it's a lot more complicated than people think.
It is.
But the thing I like about drip is, number one, how efficient it is. I mean, you can over-irrigate. We have a community garden in Logan where we have drip irrigation in some raised beds. And I made my intern this year measure the output, because a lot of people assume, oh, it's water-wise just because it's drip. And it's really not.
Yeah.
And we measured the output, and we were putting down 75 gallons per week.
Yeah.
Just on a regular timed event.
Well, and the one of the real big disconnects with drip is, and something that I've learned fairly recently as I've gotten into the calculations more completely, because I've been working with drip for quite a few years now on crops like grapes and stuff. But looking at it more in a homeowner setting, and even with the drought, and looking more carefully about, okay, well, how much water is drip putting down? Drip is measured in gallons per hour typically. So how many gallons per hour does this emitter put out? But if you look at irrigation recommendations for a given area, it's in inches.
Yeah.
So say, well, we need, right now, this time of year, a typical landscape might need an inch and a half of water a week. Okay, well, that's great. How do I convert this emitter that is 1 gallon per hour into inches of rain or something comparable to that? How do I make those things talk to each other? And there's some formulas that are used in the industry. But what I've learned is that drip puts out water a lot faster than I realized too. We can hit that 1 inch an hour or that half an inch
pretty quick.
In fact, in some cases, it's as little as running a drip system for 10 minutes.
Yeah, and it really depends. And the number one thing with drip, well, there's two things. One, you need to know your pressure, how hard the water is coming into the system, because drip has to operate between 15 and 40
And most PSI. Most of the manufacturers, when they specify that, hey, this emitter will leak 1 gallon per hour, it's based on 15 or 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a pressure regulator or pressure reducer on your system, you might be putting 70 or 80 pounds in that system, and you might be putting down double or triple the amount of water.
Mine's
without realizing
at 100.
It. Yeah, or 100. And at those kind of high pressures, you're going to probably
rupture the system.
It
blows the pipes out because they can't handle those pressures.
I put a 30-pound regulator on my system, and I turned the hose bib on full, and it blew up the regulator.
Yeah. So you really have to know the pressure.
Yeah.
The second thing is, if you have secondary water, you've got to have a filter system. I mean, these small holes and orifices that the water come out of drip, they can plug so quick. And so a really good filter system. Good news is most of the technology has come a ton.
Yeah,
well,
filters
it's come
are
a long
pretty
way.
Affordable. And in some cases, even installing two filters, one that's a little more coarse. I know that some of the users that are on kind of the more of the pond water type stuff, they have more things like snails they have to deal with. So installing two filters, one that's more coarse to catch the big things, and then a finer one that will catch all that small particulate stuff that'll come in.
And the fancy systems actually will self-clean. Every so many gallons that comes through, it'll turn on and scrub the filter off for you.
Yeah.
Now, my home does not have
one. No, my home doesn't have one either. But it just has a valve at the bottom of the filter case that I open periodically, and it flushes the outside of the filter. So I don't have to take the filter completely out. But at the end of the season, I usually take all my screens out of my drip irrigation zones, clean them off with a toothbrush, put them back in.
Yeah, so you're ready to go.
I'm good to go.
So before we go to break, if you had to make some recommendations for people wanting to install drip that had never done it, what would be just some bullet points that you would tell them to help reduce the pain of learning?
So I would go to a good sprinkler supply store. And, nurseries are good at plants. Sprinkler stores are good at at equipment and supplies that in that route. So I would definitely do your homework. I love drip because it's like Legos to me. There's so many different options and so many ways to do it that it's just, to me, it's like playing in the landscape. But
that makes it harder for somebody who's trying to get into it and maybe wanting to be more water conscious. That learning curve makes it harder for them to understand what they need to buy. Because you go to a store and there's 1,000 options for drip.
Yeah.
There's emitters of different gallons per hour. There's micro sprays. There's micro tubing. There's larger tubing. It's like, well, what do I need? What fittings?
Yeah, you mix and match, and it doesn't
quite. And then you really can't compare or know what kind of water you're needing. They say, well, how long do I water this? Well, what are your gallons per hour on the emitters? Yeah. Well, I have some 4, I have some 2, I have some 1, and then it's like, well, what I would say, Tom, to answer your question is don't do point source drip unless you've got rock gardens or something where that's the only option. I would lay a grid system out where that whole flower bed gets irrigated evenly, and this is also best for trees. The biggest mistake people make, I think, in drip is that they put a point source emitter on a tree.
And it drips in a 6-inch radius.
Yeah, you're covering a drip emitter will typically cover a 12 by 12-inch area, 1 square foot. So it doesn't work for trees. So install a grid system where you've got a drip running every 12 to 16 inches, and don't even mess with point source.
Okay, this is a ton of information. It's like drinking from a fire hose here, especially if you've not done drip before. So I think the most important thing we can leave it here is not only that drip can be a huge advantage in saving water, but you got to take it seriously and figure it out and do it right.
Do it right the first time.
Resources to do that. One is finding a good sprinkler supply place that will take some time and help educate you. Are there any resources from the extension available for folks?
We have a website called drought.usu.edu that talks a lot about irrigation. There's also CWEL, C-W-E-L, that talks a lot about water-wise irrigation practices. But in extension, we're always teaching classes. I'm actually going down to Kanab and St. George area on Monday to teach a drip irrigation class. So, yeah, check our website. There's always going to be a class near you.
There you go. We have got to get out and take a break here right now. I've been running long on this segment, but it's great information. Thanks, you guys. We are going to take that break, and we'll be back with more of your calls and texts on the other side on the KSL Greenhouse Show.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
It's the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Thank you for being with us on this beautiful Saturday, Ton. It's a great day to be out getting into the garden and dealing with some of the things we're talking about.
It is. We've had a long discussion on drip. I hope I didn't confuse or frustrate people.
We muddied the drip water.
We did, but it's possible to do. Hit your local supply store. Once you learn what you're doing, hardware stores have an incredible selection.
Just educate yourself.
It is. It's just really, for a couple of weeks, you need to educate yourself. And once you're up to speed, it's actually not too bad. It's no different than learning PVC or poly. So
it can be done. And if you do it right, it will save a lot of water.
Yeah.
And it can last for many years.
Yeah.
So.
All right, we promised to take a call here. This is Dan, who's been waiting in Sandy. Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Hey, I had a tree removed professionally where they had to bring in a crane to lift it out of my backyard. And I couldn't afford at the time. This happened just a couple months ago. And I couldn't afford to have him stump grind it, too. So he put a poison on the outer rings of this tree. It's probably 4 foot in diameter. He put a chemical called Tordon, T-O-R-D-O-N. And I have a couple pots and a hanging pot close by this tree, like within where this stump is, probably within a foot. And all of them, those plants are slowly dying, curling up. My question is this chemical or chemicals like it, do they go airborne where they can contaminate what's close to them like that?
They can. More often than not, they kind of adhere to the soil particles and they move with water. But they can volatilize and cause some issue. They're actually, I don't want to say scary chemical. They're really good at what they do.
Too good.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're using the active ingredients, picloram in Tordon, there's another one called triclopyr. They're both sold in the nursery industry as tree and stump killers. And the reason is that they kill them. I used some mm-hmm. on a stump 1 year, and the grass would not grow in that section for 2 years.
So what happens with Tordon particularly is it can leak out of the roots of the plant that it was applied to, and then it affects the neighboring plants. So that's more likely to happen than a volatilizing from a ring application around the stump. But that is possible. It's also possible that you have gotten herbicide drift from some other application in the neighborhood where the wind has blown, or it's volatilized there from what we would say, an illegal application where they didn't follow the label based on temperature or wind restrictions, those kinds of things.
I was driving around just yesterday past somebody spraying 2,4-D, which is a broadleaf weed killer, and you can smell it just lofting on the air, and I just know that I'm just going to start.
All those landscapes in the area are going to be damaged.
In that next couple weeks, I'm going to get a lot of samples brought in from that zip code.
What virus do I have? Well, that's called the... illegal drift virus.
All right. Dan, does that answer your question?
Yep, it does. Thank you very much.
Hopefully that helps you out. And sometimes, you know, the bottom line is these things are so effective, they're almost too effective if you don't have the education and the skill to apply them correctly.
Yeah, and I wouldn't use Tordon in a landscape at all. That's more for roadsides and edges of pastures and things where you're not trying to grow plants in close proximity to each other.
Like, again, read the fact sheets and the information.
It's not labeled for homeowners at all.
There you go. Okay, we are going to take a break now, and we're going to break for the news and traffic at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with the final half hour of the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.